You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Very special show today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Colt Molesky, and I'm joined by Tom Schreier and by the host of the Locked On Celtics podcast, John Corrales. I have a special show today because the Celtics are playing the Timberwolves for the first time this season. Should be a really fun game. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me today. John, thanks for calling in from Boston and joining the show and helping us break down the Celtics.
You got it.
So this one is going to be interesting for a number of reasons, primarily because the Celtics have the dominant record in the East. They're 31-10 right now after a big win against the Cavaliers. Now, I know that the Cavaliers were coming off a back-to-back, but John, could you just quickly kind of tell us your reactions from that game, kind of going into this game? What was it like, seeing your team really beat up on a team that's led by LeBron?
Well, I mean, that's always nice to do when they're your biggest rivals in the East, really. It's nice to get a nice convincing win. Of course, yeah, they were on a back-to-back, and they had issues. Kevin Love played terribly, and the Celtics finally had a couple of days rest, which is very unusual for them so far this season. And they are, I believe, 8-0 now is the statistic when they have more rests than their opponents. So, but what's funny is they have only eight games, and they've gotten more rests than their opponents, which might be more kind of interesting there. But it's nice to get that win. It's nice to beat LeBron. I'm not sure that means a whole lot moving forward because Isaiah Thomas, we saw him return. We saw him play well in his return. If that's going to be how he plays, then the Cavaliers are going to have a different dimension, and that's going to be a different team when they face off in a month from now. So I'll just gladly take the win and be encouraged that when the Celtics are getting rest, some of the slippage that we've seen from the Celtics over the course of December seems to be cleaning up a little bit, and hopefully as they move forward after this weekend's game, they have a few days off because then they're off to London. And that London game is kind of seen as a sort of finish line for the Celtics. That schedule in December was brutal. And now to have some rest on either side, I think they've got 3 days off on either side of that game, they can kind of reset, recharge, and head into the second half of the season kind of fresh.
After 31 wins, you had the 16-game win streak, and then they had a little bit of a rough patch. They've come out of that, and now they're beaten up on a Cleveland team. It's fair to assume that this is more of a consistent team, and you can kind of brush aside the people who are waiting for the young players to kind of fall off a cliff here or to have that rookie game. And I think the rotation is deep enough where even if maybe you see a younger player start to slip up, you can get him out of there and put in a different guy and put in another roster spot or another key on the roster. How impressive has it been for Brad Stevens to orchestrate all of this to maximum effectiveness for such a young team?
Well, it's impressive for him. It's impressive for the guys that he's counting on, too, because take a look at Jason Tatum. Now, you can put some of that on Stevens and the staff, putting him in a good position, but that's also Jason Tatum being really great. He's much better than we expected as a rookie. And I think, you know, when Gordon Hayward went down, let's just go back to that, there was that immediate feeling of dread. And having gotten past that, that did a couple of things. That galvanized the team as a sort of, they came in with all of these expectations. All of a sudden it was Kyrie and Hayward and Horford and this rookie that Danny Ainge gave up the Brooklyn pick for. There were like a lot of people who were saying this team is the best team in the East. And there was a lot of pressure. When Hayward went down, that kind of like took the pressure off and it galvanized the team as a sort of, well, it's kind of us facing this adversity and we're going to do it together. The other thing it did, if we're looking for positives out of it, was it gave Tatum an opportunity to start and play a lot of minutes. And if Gordon Hayward was healthy, obviously this team would still be really good because he's an all-star level player. But Tatum wouldn't be getting the same opportunities. And you just have no idea what he would do with those minutes that he was getting. Would he still be the same guy? Part of what Tatum's success is he's willing to wait and play off of Kyrie and Horford and kind of take whatever overflow type offense comes to him. A lot of his threes that he's been getting, I mean, shooting almost 50% from three, are because he's playing off of teams keying in on Kyrie. They switch over, he throws the ball over to Horford, and teams overreact to that, and then it goes over to Tatum. Now Tatum's got a much more open shot, and that's kind of how he's been able to flourish. Lots of open threes, and now those closeouts are coming especially aggressively because teams are trying to recover. He attacks those closeouts, and he gets to the rim a lot, and that's built up a lot of confidence. So now all of a sudden, Tatum, he just won Rookie of the Month, and that's as much on him as it is on Stevens to count on him to do that stuff. They're also counting on a lot of young guys off the bench. Shimmy Ojeley is a rookie. Terry Rozier is a third-year player. Jaylen Brown's a starter who, you know, came up last season and kind of struggled a little bit. He would find time on the bench after screwing up. Now he's out there being asked to defend the other team's best players very often, and that's coming up. That's going well. So it's a combination of everything. Guys are playing well. They've put themselves in position to do well. Stevens is counting on them. He's trusting them. And he's created the schemes that allow them to flourish.
And a big front office win, too, just being able to draft really well and snag Jason Tatum and knowing that who your guy is going into the draft so you can kind of move around in the draft order and not be held into that number one pick slot. Really impressive there. Looking at Kyrie Irving and what he's done, Tom, we were talking about this the other day. He might be one of the more under the radar but still on their MVP candidates. Tom, what was the case for that?
This became a heated debate both on and off the air because you were basically saying with all these injuries, is there a possibility, you know, we were kind of debating whether you'd bet on LeBron to be the MVP. This is part of your degenerate gambling podcast that's kicked off here at Zone Coverage. But I guess the case for Kyrie is that he's kind of gone on his own, kind of what he wanted to do in a big media market. You know, John can probably speak to this more, but it seems like Boston teams are very scrutinized, right? It's kind of the East Coast thing and the big passionate sports fans, and gone out there and thrived. And so, I don't know, that was kind of my argument. I said, if you want to find someone, I'd love to see it be Jimmy Butler. I know what he does for the Wolves, but Kyrie seems to just have blown up his profile, ironically, when, you know, one of their best players got injured.
No, yeah. What do you think about that, John? Do you think that Kyrie has a legitimate shot at maybe being one of the MVP candidates?
I don't know if he's going to be in that conversation. I mean, he's going to get votes. I can see him getting votes. I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up, ironically, kind of where Isaiah Thomas ended up, somewhere like fifth. Because in the end, there are going to be votes for Harden. There are going to be votes for Durant, LeBron. And then you start getting into the other guys. And Jimmy Butler, sure, absolutely. I believe Jimmy Butler should get some recognition. A lot of people don't necessarily pay attention to Minnesota, you know, in the grand scheme of things. I think from the outside looking in, what's the big conversation about Minnesota? It's Tibbs playing his starters a million minutes. You know,
yes.
That's the big storyline that I keep hearing. It's like, yeah, Minnesota's good, but are they going to be able to sustain this? Because basically everybody's playing 46 minutes a game, it seems. But Butler is a very key acquisition for them, and he's kind of given them that one guy that can take over, a guy who can hit those big shots, and, you know, with a little bit of attitude, too. Like, he knows he's good, and that changes kind of, like, the attitude around the team. So I can totally see guys at the end of the season – when you look back, if Minnesota can sustain this, you say, wow, Minnesota they're pretty good. And Butler is a huge reason why. So he'll get votes. You can say, Kyrie, if the Celtics sustain this, well, if they sustain this, they're going to win 60 games, which would shock the hell out of me. But if you can say the best player on a 60-win team, best team in the East, he should get a lot of votes. There are other guys that can stake their claim to some MVP vote, so we'll see how it goes. Right now, I just don't feel like he's doing something so special that it rises to MVP level. I mean, he's a special player, but I'm just not seeing MVP type stuff. I'm not seeing LeBron level stuff. So he'll get votes. He'll deserve votes somewhere in the 3, 4, 5 range. But I think other guys, I think Harden's going to end up being the MVP.
Yeah. It's,
I wanted to point out real quick, and I think those are all fair points. I think it's interesting looking at Jimmy Butler specifically, but the Wolves generally, they not only have this ESPN game, which was picked up, and this was actually supposed to be on Fox Sports North. We found this out because Dave Benz was on our podcast, Wolves Wired, yesterday, and he's stuck in New York because obviously they're not going to fly him out to Boston to not cover a game. So so they not only have that, but you know we're looking 24-15. Is this sustainable with all the minutes and all that? Well, we're going to find out pretty soon, and I think they're going to find out very publicly with this game, ESPN, you know, in Boston, they're on ESPN. Then they have New Orleans, which sometimes those bigger teams give them a little bit of trouble. Then you have Cleveland on Monday, and then two more games pretty, you know, in that next week. The Oklahoma City is on ESPN. Portland's on ESPN. So in some ways, it's positive that you're going to get national exposure for the Wolves. The negative is that if things start to come apart, or even if they're not, you know, winning at the pace that they were winning, and they did just lose to Brooklyn, you're going to get exposed to national television. So there is a kind of catch-22, but this is a chance for the Wolves to kind of elevate Jimmy Butler and his status as an MVP.
Yeah, and flip that narrative a little bit from maybe, hopefully, they're playing a ton of minutes in Minnesota to maybe Jimmy Butler is really great and he's kind of the Minnesota savior. Maybe flip that narrative a little bit. That could also help too, because I believe narrative plays a huge part when the MVP voters are deciding who they want to throw their vote to. It'll be a very interesting field for that, just because I think the favorites, and you got guys like Harden or Curry, have been taking some time off for various injuries, and you've got such a wide field this year. It makes the conversation interesting. We're going to get into the breakdown of the Celtics versus the Timberwolves after a real quick break. Celtics playing the Timberwolves. I think it's a very interesting storyline that this team is the deep versus the shallow team. Could you just kind of just talk about the deep bench that the Celtics have and how that could play a role against the Timberwolves and a team that, like you said before, John, plays a lot of minutes for their starters? Could that have a big impact in this game, you think?
Yeah, well, I see a couple of things that could happen. It's the Celtics have basically had problems in the second quarters of games when they have gone to their bench. So I think there's a potential for the Celtics to kind of struggle. If the starters for Minnesota are playing against a second unit, largely second unit for the Celtics, then there may be a little bit of a run in the second quarter that the Timberwolves can make. But is that something they can hold on to? I think one thing in the NBA this year that we've seen a lot of is 15-point leads go away. And now more than ever in the NBA, building up an early 15, even 20-point lead is more meaningless, I think, than ever. With this
sore subject for Timberwolves fans right there.
Sorry. But, yeah, I think in today's NBA where there's such a heavy reliance on the three, you could be up 20, then a team can get a couple of stops, bang a few threes. Next thing you know, you're up 11. And 11 is very manageable. That's something you can easily overcome, and that 20-point lead goes away fast. So I think there's a potential for the Celtics to get down early, but for the Timberwolves to fade late, I think that's a thing that they do, and I think the Celtics could end up turning it around and making a fourth-quarter run to run away with this. When it comes to the Celtics bench, they have a few guys that you need to watch for in the Minnesota perspective. Terry Rozier, I'll start with him because he's playing the best stretch of basketball in his life.
Big game after Cleveland.
Yeah, he's playing the past week or so, past couple of weeks, I'd say maybe 5 or 6 games. He's been a much better player. His shot is falling. I think he's playing much more in control. My biggest criticism of Rozier is that he's been a little out of control. I think a lot of his fancy dribbling and attempts at the rim have gotten a little more kind of reserved. He's playing with a better pace. So that could be a big problem for Minnesota off the bench. Marcus Smart coming off the bench can be a game changer. Like he we know his shot can be off. I'll just put that nicely. But he does a lot of things. He's always in the middle of something positive. And if there's a 50-50 ball or an offensive rebound late that needs to be grabbed, he somehow finds his way to that ball. And then the Celtics have different things that they can try to do. Will they start Aaron Baines or will they start Marcus Morris? And if they start one, then the other's coming off the bench and both can be very effective. Daniel Tice is an underrated addition to this team. Danny Ainge hit big on him. He can protect the rim. He can fly in for alley-oops. He can hit the three. It's not been falling for him much this year, but he hit a couple in that Cleveland game, which were kind of impressive. So they can go different styles. Tice is much more mobile. Baines is he's got good lateral movement, but he can really protect the rim. Morris is an individual scorer. So if one thing isn't working, they can go. They can go with brute force. Semi Ojeleye is a big, muscular guy, and he's a rookie, but he's big. I mean, he's got combat muscles, like we like to say, and he can go out. You can throw him and Baines on the floor, and if for some reason Minnesota's getting to the rim a lot, he can go out there. He might not have the foot speed to stay with Jimmy Butler for long stretches, but he can get to spots, and you don't go through Semi Ojeleye. You bounce off of Semi Ojeleye. So there are different looks that the Celtics can give a team depending on how things go. They can go more athletic. They can go bigger and more bruising. So when you talk about the Celtics' depth, that is one thing that the Celtics can do. They can adjust to different styles of play.
Yeah, so many lines to throw out at a team. And, Tom, if you're going back to that point about 20-point leads being evaporated so quickly, how nervous does it make you looking at the Timberwolves? And they had that rough stretch against Denver and Milwaukee where they saw big leads evaporate quickly. And now you have Kyrie Irving, who can just explode for points whenever his team needs him to really knock down shots. How nervous does he make you in this game?
We kind of joked last year. Obviously, hockey being big in the Twin Cities, they say the 2-goal lead is the most dangerous lead in hockey. On Twitter, people were joking the 20, point lead is the most dangerous lead in basketball, or at least it was for the Minnesota Timberwolves last year. Yeah, and we just haven't seen a team like Houston, for example, that in an instant can turn it on and blow up the score. And I think this happened to the Wolves earlier in the year in that Golden State game where people went into it saying, look, at half, this is a one-point game. I think Golden State was leading by one. You enter the third quarter, and it seemed like you blinked, and all of a sudden the game was out of hand. So, yeah, you worry about that a little bit, and I think this is an ongoing narrative with Tibbs, and this is what I've written, that Crawford's given you good things and asked for more minutes, right, and performed well, especially at times when Andrew Wiggins was slumping. Tyus Jones now kind of thrust into the starter role, but has played well, at least well enough to be a quality point guard backup point guard. Gorgie Jang's another guy, $64 million contract. I think he's played pretty well. Again, it was against the Lakers, but that was the game I was covering. He looked exceptional to me, and he's played well in the past, right? Yeah. So it's how he uses that bench and maybe mitigates some of the effects of fatigue, where a team like Boston maybe takes advantage of some sore legs and runs you out to the gym, right?
Yeah, no. And two, it's just a little concerning after the Brooklyn game. I know that one's the one that's fresh in everybody's minds. 1 for 11 from three-point range for the Timberwolves against 14 for 30. So not only you're seeing there, not only are they really poor shooting the ball from three-point land, but they're also having trouble defending it. And that's been a little bit of a theme this year for them, is that if you're going to beat them, it's going to be outside and it's going to be forcing them into an up-tempo style play from the perimeter. And then you have a couple different styles of play too here with Celtics, Timberwolves. Timberwolves, the seventh offense in the NBA, and Boston, the number one defense in the NBA. John, are you looking for the Celtics to maybe turn this into a little bit of a slogged down, slower game, especially in the fourth quarter, to really pull away from the Timberwolves?
Well, I don't know if they're going to slow it down. They don't play with the greatest pace as it is. I know Brad Stevens has gone into the past two seasons saying he wants to fly around, and they haven't really quite gotten there yet. And I just think personnel-wise, that might be their ultimate goal. And when Hayward comes back someday, they can move a little bit closer to that. But I think the slowdown is going to be kind of where we go anyway. Kyrie, if you run a Kyrie-Al Horford pick and roll, and that can be a million different things. So there's a very easy way for the Celtics, when you talk about slowing things down the stretch, that would be the way to do it. You can run Kyrie off of any sort of pick and roll, or you run some sort of stagger screens or different sets that who do you guard? What's your choice? If Al Horford is hitting threes, you're dead. You got no shot. Because if Al Horford is starting to bang threes down the stretch in the fourth quarter, once he hits a couple, then defenses don't know what to do. You have to go respect that. And then you're leaving Kyrie Irving and his handles even a little sliver of space. He's going to go through that. I mean, there's no stopping that. And who's going to protect the rim? I mean, Towns isn't going to be able to stop that. There's just nobody that's going to be able to prevent Kyrie from doing what he wants to do if Horford is banging those threes. So that they're not purposely going to slow it down. That's just going to be how they play. And that's where Tatum ends up killing people, because then it becomes the Kyrie and Al Horford show, and everybody's got their head looking at that, and Tatum ends up finding space. And he makes 2-3 plays down the stretch that just murder you.
We're going to go to a quick break here, but then we're going to do some score predicting to close out the show. So I do this. I have people do this pretty much all the time. It's mostly for me, so I can try and get people to tell me what the over-under is going to be, so I can bet on it later before the game starts off. So we're going to go John first, then Tom. What do you think the score, the outcome is for tonight's game?
I think the Celtics win, and I think they hold Minnesota under 100. So I'm going to say it's going to be like 106 to 94.
106-94 for John. Tom?
Yeah, low scoring makes a lot of sense to me, given that, you know, Tibbs likes to slog it down. It seems like Boston's comfortable playing that way too. If the Wolves are going to win, I think both teams are going to be under 100. And so I'm going to say 98-94 Wolves. That's probably a homer pick. I'm actually probably going against the grain here. Wolves wired, we definitely didn't feel like they could win it. But either way, I mean, I see it as being maybe first team to 100 wins this game.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of the opposite. I think if the Wolves win this, they're going to really try and make this a shootout and win like a 115-110. I think more realistically, the Celtics are able to slow them down and play the opposite, and so they probably get a win about 101 to like a 95 kind of win for the Celtics. I think that they really try and slow the pace of the game down in the fourth quarter, and I think Al Horford is going to knock it down some shots outside Jaylen Brown. I think that's going to be a real problem for the Celtics Timberwolves, because they're going to have problems defending already from the three-point range, and that's not going to help at all. That's going to exacerbate it. That's it for us here at Locked On Wolves. John, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
You got it. My pleasure.
Thank you also for Tom for joining the show. As always, you can go on zonecoverage.com after this and read all kinds of great Timberwolves content, as well as following all of us on Twitter. Follow myself at C. Molesky. Let me know what you thought of the show and what you want to see, maybe who you want to see on coming shows. This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast for the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves,